invigorated by the Parsha.
Okay, we begin, we continue the Rambam, Perek Beis, Halacha Vav, Hilchos Mal Vavalova. Again, we're talking about, you know, we're talking about taking collaterals and things like that from people and stuff like that, and the rabbinic laws that were going on over there. So we're on Halacha Vav now, and we're dealing also with crooks, with kanunyas, where people suggesting they owed money to other people prior to this fellow, and other people would even agree to it, and they would enable the guy to get off the hook of paying. So there's going to be similar instances coming in Halacha Vav. But first we're introduced to a common law, which is in Talmudic parlance is called the Shibuda de Rav Nosson, which we've already referred to it at least once that we should be aware of. And it goes like this. Ruvain Shahoya Chayev L'Shimon. Ruvain owes money to Shimon. Shimon lent money to Ruvain. Maya, $100. And Valevi Chayev Ruvain. And Levi borrowed $100 from Ruvain. Okay? So, and we're now in a case where Ruvain's supposed to pay back Shimon. Levi's supposed to pay back Ruvain. Ruvain ain't got no money to pay back Shimon. But on the other hand, Levi does owe the money to Ruvain.
And he has money.
And Levi's got money. So what we say is, Motzin mi Levi v'nosin l'Shimon. Even though Levi has no direct connection to Shimon, Shimon can go right to Ruvain and take the money from Shimon.
No, Levi. Levi, you can take the money from Levi.
Shimon can take the money straight from Levi, direct. That's called the Shibuda de Rav Nosson. Because since Levi owes Ruvain and Ruvain owes Shimon, Levi can pay back Ruvain. So go direct. Don't wait for Ruvain to collect from Levi and Shimon has to go back to Ruvain. So Shimon goes directly to Levi.
Once he does that, then Ruvain's off the hook. Like
what?
Yeah.
Then Ruvain's...
No, well, they've been paid back.
Yeah. Everybody's
everything's squared.
The books are squared. The middleman.
Everything is squared. Yeah. Right? Even though Shimon and Levi don't even know each other. You know, but all I know, Shimon knows that Levi owes Ruvain money, so Shimon goes to Levi to collect the money. Now, Lefikach, therefore, im ein l'Ruvain nechasim. So let's say Ruvain hasn't got any assets. V'hayu lo shtarei chov al Levi, and he's got, there are credit notes, promissory notes, on Levi from Ruvain. But now, and we got it, we see it, but now Levi comes up with a little curveball.
A shtick.
Amar Levi, I want you to know, that document, that promissory note that Levi's holding, I want you to know it's a shtar amonahu. It's a document of trust. Now, a shtar amonah basically is the following. Sometimes, you know, you don't have time from when you have the guy agreeing to lend you the money to write the document. So a lot of times the guys would have the document written up in advance on trusting that they're going to eventually be able to borrow the money from the guy.
Right.
In other words, Ruvain says, you know, Levi's got a document, but I kind of gave him the document before I borrowed the money from
him. It's an anticipatory document.
That's a very good way of describing that, Martin. An anticipatory document, right? He gave it to him with a trust that he wouldn't demand that he... Ruvain gave Levi this... What was that word again?
Anticipatory
document. It's a good word. An anticipatory document. He gives it to Levi, assuming that Levi would never dare collect money if he never really lent him the money yet. You know, for whatever reason, I'm not going to have time later to write the document. Levi wants the document now. I'm giving it to you in an anticipatory fashion that as soon as you get the money to me, you'll already have the document.
So every April he borrows. It's now March, and April it's crazy for him. So March he writes a document. So when he comes in April, it's already set.
It's already there.
He writes a document saying, I owe you money that you haven't given me yet.
That's right.
Yeah. Because he doesn't have the time to write it this because, far.
So what? So you don't have time.
Because Levy's going to say like this. I'm really busy. Levy's going to say like this. I have funds available in a few weeks. I'm going to be very busy then. You want, write the document now, as the loan happened already, and I'm not going to, you know, use this document against you unless I actually let you
the
money.
It's like setting a line of credit. That way we do these. Yeah. We set it up beforehand now.
Yeah, but it's more than a line of credit. The document says he's borrowed the money.
No, I mean, you do the work now for a line of credit. I'm not saying exactly the same thing, but you get all the paperwork done.
Sometimes, you know, a guy says, look, I'm not going to lend you the money unless I have the promissory note. well, you know, next month I'm going to be so busy, I won't have time to write your promise. I'll write you the promissory note now. You look like an honest guy. You have the promissory note, and I'm giving you with a shtar amana. It's a document of trust. I trust that you're not going to collect the money from me if I didn't give you the money. That's a shtar. There is such things as a shtar amana. So Levi now, so we got our system here. Shimon lent money to Reuven, right? And Reuven, borrowed, rather, Shimon lent money to Reuven. Reuven lent money to Levi, okay? And then comes around, there's documents on Levi. And Levi says, I want you to know that really it was a trust document to Reuven, and he never really gave me the money. So what would that, if we would believe that, what would that happen? Well, Reuven's got no money to pay Shimon.
And Levi's Shimon, off the hook.
Shimon's got no one to collect from Levi because Levi says it was only a shtar amana.
Yeah.
Or he says, yes, there's a document, but paruahu, I paid it off, and for some reason, Reuven never gave me back the document, but I paid him back. And more than that, vaho de la Reuven, Reuven says, that's exactly what happened.
Whoa.
That either I never lent him the money, or I got the money,
or it's an anticipatory document,
or is paid back, or whatever. And therefore, there's no money that Levi has coming to me. Levi and Reuven both agree that Reuven says, I'm not going to collect any money from Levi. He's off the hook. I don't want anything from him. And Reuven agrees. They both agree that there's, even though there is a promissory note, they both agree there's no debt at this time.
Wow, now we get Reuven off the hook.
So now
not so fast.
Will we accept this?
Nope.
It's two against one. In other words, two guys are saying there is no debt from Levi to Reuven, even though they're looking at a document that says Levi owes Reuven the money. And so the Rambam says, "Ein mashgichin al hodoso." We do not consider the confession over here of what he says, because why? Same thing as we said yesterday. Shema kenunya hemosi. They might be making a trick to get rid of Shimon's off the hook. And obviously, why would Levi do this?
Why would Reuven do this?
Well, why would Reuven do this? Because at least he'll get some money out of the deal.
No, but his whole debt gets exhausted by...
Well, he's willing, even though he owes him the money, he says, listen, afterwards, we'll cut a deal. We'll cut a deal in half, and therefore I don't have to pay back Shimon.
Yeah, only have to pay Levi
would have to pay 100. Reuven would get nothing. Right? Reuven borrowed 100 from Shimon.
Yes.
Levi owes 100 to Reuven. Right. Now, wouldn't Reuven and Levi like to make a deal? Listen, we'll say that that's paid, and Levi, you'll only pay me 50.
There you go.
So Levi still owes Shimon the
100. No, but I haven't got no money, and I'm never gonna have money.
You got that 50.
No, they're not telling anybody. He said it to debts was whoever was
that's
alone.
Honest people.
Reuven is saying that promissory note is worthless. And Levi's saying it's worthless. Now Shimon has nothing to collect from Reuven because he's quote unquote a pauper. So now Shimon will never be able to collect from Reuven, because Reuven is going to somehow always be poor. So instead of that 100 that was supposed to come through Reuven, from Levi to Shimon, so Reuven says, listen, he doesn't owe me the money. So now Levi will be very happy to do this, because instead of having to give up 100 to go to Shimon, he'll make a side deal with Reuven. Listen, I'll give you 50. Now you keep quiet about it. Don't tell Shimon that you got 50. Because we both said you don't have to. I don't have to pay you.
Don't tell him I gave you 50.
Yeah, don't say I gave you the 50. And Levi's happy to do it. He only has to pay 50. Reuven's happy to do it. He walks away with 50 and doesn't have to give it to Shimon. He pretends he's a poor man for the rest of his life, or whatever. Or maybe right now he doesn't have the money. Okay, in a few years maybe he'll agree. But he's willing to get him off his back for a long time. We don't do this because it could be chicanery. Is that a good word?
Yeah, that's good. I like
chicanery
that.
Is also
don't
right
often see it. You don't often hear it.
Okay, so and that's what happens. We're not finished yet. But Shimon just can't waltz in and take the money, because there are two guys who are disagreeing with him. There still is. Let's look at what's going on over here. You've got a promissory note, Levi to Reuven, which on the one hand suggests that Shimon can go to Levi and collect. But you got Reuven and Levi both saying that promissory note is worthless. That's worth something. Not enough for us to just take their word for it. Right. But can Shimon just say, okay, I'm taking $100 from Levi without doing anything? So what do you think would at least be reasonable that Shimon has to do?
I know.
Swear. And therefore, Eli Yeshava Shimon. Shimon has to swear. V'yitom a Levi. And now he can collect Levi. Kedin kol toirev sheda nifra el b'shul. Like anybody else who makes a claim that cannot collect without an oath. Without making an oath, then you have to make an oath. Then similarly, v'chein kol. Now he's repeating the idea he's already said in the past. V'chein kol mi sheish lov shtar chov v'hoda la'achem yasva v'cher. Even though a guy has a debt to somebody, but he admits he had a previous debt to somebody else, he doesn't have money that they can, that the both debts can be collect. So he got one which a document is a debt, but the other guy claims there's an oral debt that was earlier to you. Which one do we collect from? Kova Balashava. We only collect from the one with the written document, because that we know is for sure true. So yes, the Kanunya shows us we're afraid the other guy will make a Kanunya with him and claim there was an earlier debt as opposed, and he's just repeating what was learned in the Halacha. Hey. Okay, so that's how we have to be very suspicious for tricky guys. Okay, now Zion goes to a new idea about loans.
What does Shimon actually swear? When he swears, what does
Shimon says, Reuven owes me the money.
Right.
And Levi owes Reuven the money, and I want to collect from Levi. I see.
How does that?
I see there's a promissory note, and will not accept the collusion.
But how does it prove?
Can you swear?
What?
How can you swear something that Levi is denying?
One second, Ella Yeshiva Shimon. It says Shimon swears.
I
hear you're asking what can he swear?
Levi should swear.
Levi can't swear because then he gets off the hook.
He's swearing that he's not collusion.
No, that's not what the Rambam is not saying. That Rambam is saying Shimon swears and he takes a Levi like anyone who wants to collect that he only can collect with an oath. Right. But I hear your question. In other words, what is he actually swearing?
Yeah.
The guy owes me money. We know he owes me money. You've got a document. What's he going to, unless he's going to swear that what, I know it isn't a shtar amana?
That he can't say. How does he know? He doesn't know that for sure. We said, Rama says we don't believe
I'm not
that.
Sure. What is your English commentary saying, anything, Sam?
That's Sam. Usually the answer about English commentary.
What's he swearing? In my commentary, it's also not clear. He's saying, he says he can, he says he swears with a sefer Torah. Oh, wait, shalom nifrachosa, velo machlu or machru. Oh, I guess he's only swearing that the debt is still a good debt.
Yeah.
That's all he swears. He swear this is, he has to swear that this debt he has me, he never paid me back. That's what the commentary says. Shalom nifrachosa, the debt was not paid.
No one denies that.
Lo machlu o machru lacher. I didn't sell to anybody
else.
Even
Reuven would say that.
I don't know. Okay, it's a question. No, your commentary has nothing to say, Sam.
Nope.
Good point.
Come on, Sam.
Right. Come on.
You want me to pinch him?
Okay, I don't know. No, that's from before. All right, I don't know. But it seems that saying he swears that the money is still owed to him. And, you know, maybe he knows that maybe the guy wrote a shtar amana. I guess he's saying, as far as I know, there's no shtar amana here. And as far as I know, he owes me the money. Well, he has to know that the third party owes the second party something. How else can he collect from the third party? Right? How does he collect from the third party? He's got to know that there's a debt from the second party to the third party.
So am I in the right place for this?
But the base is end of six.
The Beis Din would know that there's a debt.
There's a debt.
Wouldn't the document be in the Beis Din?
Yeah.
Takes a note.
Yeah, yeah. There's no footnote. Shimon may take an oath.
All right, well, he's going to...
Sorry. Says Shimon may take an oath and expropriate the money from Levi. So it sounds like...
That's right. So
what's the oath?
It doesn't tell us what
he's getting money. Why is he getting...
Because Levi owes... Levi owes Reuven.
Levi's denying that it's a good...
Levi claims he doesn't owe Reuven any money. And Shimon makes the oath and collects from Levi.
So what's he...
Well, that's what we're asking.
Because he has a shtar in his property. So he has that shtar, but he says, oh no, this is not
unless, unless you want to say he's swearing that he knows that the debt wasn't paid.
He can't, how can he do that? He can't say that.
Well, then maybe only if he could swear to that.
I can't see, that's impossible. How is he supposed to know that?
So then what's he swearing?
That's what we're doing.
Why? The question, why would he has a promissory note that Reuven owes him money. He doesn't have to say anything. The promissory note talks for him, right?
Right.
So why does he have to swear anything?
Yeah.
All right.
Does he have to take
it? Well, it seems that there's a Rambam in the 22nd chapter he's referencing, but I don't know. If, I'm not going to have time to make this way.
Let's see. Where does it say? What note is
that? Perikop Basil love. Okay. Right, that's going to be way too long. So, I don't have time. Okay, we're going to have to leave it as a question for now.
Even if Levi didn't deny that it was a good promise,
then Shimon can go right to Levi.
So why does it say this is the law that applies to anyone who expropriates property? He may do so only after taking an oath.
Well, you're expropriating property
from
Levi.
That means against his will, he's taking it somehow.
Yeah, but why does that oath help? I mean, the facts are the facts. You have two promissory notes. You should be able to collect from him, right? Okay, I'm not sure. We'll have to leave. It's a good question, and I'm not sure. Okay, Zion.
Maybe answered later on.
Well, if we all can remember when we get to chapter 22, Halacha 6, then maybe we'll reference that. Okay, Halacha Zion. Asr la'adam la'halvus ma'osav below edim. It's forbidden for a person to lend money to another person without witnesses to the loan. Va'afilu tamachachem, even if you lend it to tamachachem. Why? Very simple. You're opening up the door for the borrower to lie. If there's witnesses, let's say you lend him $100 and there's no witnesses, no nothing. There's no written document, there's nothing. You just give him the money. You're not allowed to do that. Why? Because you come a month later, you say, can you pay me the money? He says, what are you talking about?
What money? What money
now,
are you talking
now, why
about?
Is the guy lying? Because you've given him an opening to lie because you have no proof to show that he's a liar. That's why you can't have without witnesses, or for that matter, without a written document. Either one would be his witnesses either way.
So that's a stumbling block.
Right? That's exactly what's happening. And even if he's a Talmud Chacham, even though you know he's not going to lie, but could be the Talmud will just forget he borrowed the money. The famous story with the...
Yeah. It was in his safe.
I forgot
safe
who it was. The Rashash.
The money in his safe.
The Rashash.
Oh, and the money
the
was
guy
there.
Paid him back, and he forgot he paid
he
him back.
In
he put
the
it
book.
In his Gemara.
He put it in his Gemara.
Right? Yeah. So even the Talmud wouldn't lie, but he could have played and plumb forgot that he borrowed the
he
money.
He deep in study. He put
you
it in
the right.
Book.
So therefore, you can't do that unless... Unless you're lending the money with a collateral.
Now he's got the collaterals.
Because now, right, there's nothing to worry about.
Here, look, I
because,
got the collateral.
Because then he would make an oath, and he could keep the collateral. He's going to say, listen, I lent him the money, and he didn't keep it. And then he'll get to keep it. Yeah. But however, still in all, the best thing is to lend with a written document. Why? Because it's written down. And the amount is written down. Everything's written down. If you collect the collateral, we don't know for how much it's a collateral. Collaterals don't come to the precise dollar value, while a shtar is the precise dollar value. Now, we call malvul aidim, someone who borrows lends without witnesses, over mishum l'vnei avrili t'nishol, you've transgressed the negative commandment of not putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, because now you're going to cause give the possibility for the borrower to want to lie.
Not only that, but you get a
and more than
yourself.
That, for Gorim Kolas, you cause a curse upon himself. What's the curse? Because people, when they see what's going on, they're going to say, look at this guy. He's collecting money that isn't coming to him. Whoa. Because there's no witnesses, there's no nothing. If he's going to, you know, take the money, right? People are going to say, what's this going on? He went and took the money from the guy? There wasn't even any proof. So therefore, the only bad things are going to come from this.
Does that mean... Halacha's saying you shouldn't use promissory notes?
No, promissory notes, fine. If it's signed and everything, you've got all the proof you want in the world.
With witnesses? Isn't that saying...
When you make an IOU, there's got to be some signature on the bottom. At least the borrower has to sign it. Somebody has to sign it. If I just write a note with my handwriting with no signatures on it, what's it worth?
Nothing.
Promissory note, at least you make the borrower sign it. And better yet, you have witnesses sign it.
That's 100%.
That's for sure. Oh, okay. I'm going to write now. Shelly owes me $10,000. I'm going to write, look what I wrote. Shelly owes me $10,000. That's a very good proof because I wrote it down. It's a big proof.
We witnessed it.
Listen, for $2,000, I witnessed that.
You know, it's okay. That's what you need. What do you call that guy? Notary Public.
Yeah,
right? You need at least something that we know that it happened. Okay, Ches. How about the following? Harav Shalova Me'avdo. Let's say a master borrows money from a servant. Now, for that to happen is a very rare occurrence.
Yeah, how's the servant going to get money?
Because we have a rule around this. Whatever a servant has, them own it. It's possible, but it's a very difficult way for it to happen. It's very unusual for it to happen. Anyway, but the master did borrow money from the servant. Now, what he really did was he just took money that was his.
Yeah, that's it.
The servant has $50. Now, under 99% of the circumstances, that $50 in the servant's pocket belongs to the master.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to ask, why do you have to borrow it? Because he wanted to get the money rightfully his without fighting him for it. In other words, it could be like this. The owner goes to the master and says, okay, the slave comes and says, hey, look, my lucky day, I found $50. He says, that's not your lucky day, it's my lucky day. Yeah. Give it over to me. I'm not giving it to you. And he's a big, burly servant. Go take it. So he tried it in the past, doesn't work. So he does a better approach. He says, oh, you got $50. That's good. It's quiet. A couple say, you know, slave, can you do me a favor? Can you lend me $50?
Sure, boss.
He says, no problem. You're going to promise it back? Oh, no problem. I'll pay you back. I'll lend you money. Now, a month later, he comes and says, give me money. He says, what money? The money I borrowed from you. Oh, it's mine. What do you mean it's mine? Okay, we'll go to the court. Now they go to the court. And they say, did you have $50? Sure did. How'd you get it? I found it. Really? Well, guess what? That belonged to your master the whole time. So why did he ask to borrow it only to get it out of his hands? You follow?
But there is another scenario.
That's what I meant. Now, there is a rare scenario.
In Kedushin, they talk about it, where if you're given money in order to emancipate yourself by another person, that's considered your money. It's
right.
Machlokas in the Gemara, but that's considered
right, but he
money.
Hasn't been emancipated.
Right, so before he becomes emancipated, it's still considered your money.
So this is the story. So the Rav who lent him the money, and then he freed him afterwards. Oh, love Amisha. Let's see, he borrows money from his wife. And he divorces her. All right? Now they want to come back after the emancipation or after the divorce to collect their money. They get nothing. Why? Because, first of all, whatever the servant had before he was released, under 99% of the circumstances, was
same
the master's
thing with the wife.
Anyway.
Same thing with the wife.
Any money that a wife has is becheskes law. We assume it's the husband's. There are exceptions, but again, that's not the usual. Ella im hei via raya sheminyas. Unless she's giving a proof that it's from her, dowry.
Something barzal.
That's her nifsei tzom barzal. That was her from the dowry documents that says she's bringing it belongs to her. But if she doesn't have that kind of proof, we assume whatever a wife has is really belongs to the husband as well. Mm-hmm. Why did the husband borrow it? To extract it out of the wife and out of the servant. Because he wouldn't get it another way. But that's the only reason. So therefore, we will not believe them. Okay, let's move on to chapter 3. Okay, we finished this. Chapter 3, we'll just start one or two halachas here. We're now going to be focusing on the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th mitzvahs that the Rambam introduced in the beginning of this section over here. Although he's not going to go in that order, but rather he's going to be going from 7 and 8 and then 4, 5, 6. These pages are just not coming. So again, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is, number one, not to take a collateral forcefully from somebody. You can't say, I want to take something you owe me, and you can't do that. You have to give back a mashkin when the borrower needs it, right? Can't delay giving back the mashkin.
The sweater is
okay, but those are the first three. But the next one is not to take a collateral from a widow, and not to take collateral from utensils that a person needs to eat from. So the Rambam is going to start with the last two and then work his way backwards as it is. Allah. Almana, a widow. Bein she'aniya, regardless if she's poor. Bein she'ashir, whether she's rich. Ein memashkin, so you don't extract a collateral. Now there's two ways you can do a collateral. The collateral could be at the time of the loan or it could be after the loan. In other words, I want to borrow $100. Fine, give me something as a collateral. And until you give me, I ain't giving you $100. Okay? The guy will willfully come and give him something worth $100 as a collateral. Or we could have, the guy gave a loan without a collateral, but now it's time to pay. He says, I want you to pay. I got the money. Well, then you give me a collateral for me to extend you. Okay, so that's a collateral after the loan. Now, there could be another situation where the Bezdin comes in and takes out a collateral. Well, the first two situations, clearly, a widow, whether she's poor, whether she's rich.
Irrelevant.
Now remember, a rich person can borrow money too. Still, ain mamashkin so. You don't take a collateral from her. Lo b'shasava, not at the time of the loan. Velo shelo b'shasava, and not at the time of the loan. That means when it was the time to pay back, we didn't pay back.
And
velo api bezdin, even not through a bezdin. How do we know this? Shenemer, because the Torah says, lo sachvo beged almana. You don't take the garment of a widow as a collateral. Now, obviously the Torah says it, but what would be the reason for this? Because it's going to be interesting. Imagine you have, let's say, a garment that's it's her pajamas. Yeah. So what do you have to do? You have to give it to her before night. So you're going to be coming into her house often.
Yeah.
So we're already, with the Widow Jones, right? Yes. So it's not a good scenario over here. You understand?
It's not good at all.
And especially when she's poor. Now, it might not be a case when a rich woman, you may not have to keep giving her back the collateral, but once we make a rule, we can make it straight across the board. The Torah didn't give us reason. The Torah says you don't take collaterals from a widow, period. So even though there's some logic for the poor that may not apply to the rich, but it's across the board. We don't want any hanky-panky. Just stay away. No one's going to ever take a collateral, even a halakhically permitted collateral from a man, we don't take from a woman.
I'm trying to understand the concept of collateral. When we, in Western society, if we take out a car loan and a collateral is the house, that's only if we default. We're not actually giving something over. It's a promise if we default that something can be repossessed.
Well, that's not the same kind of collateral. The collaterals here is,
like
gold
watch.
Well, it's an item. I mean, you can technically do a collateral in the house, but it's not something you can give back. It's usually a movable object is the collateral. Because there's always a lien against property anyway.
It's like pawning something.
If there's property, when you borrow money, there's automatically liens against property, but no one wants to start taking property. That's a really dirty business. You'd rather have a gold watch. Just take the gold watch and sell it.
But even if we take a $1,000 loan, go to a bank, we're not actually...
Well, if you don't pay, they're going to repossess.
No, we don't pay.
A whole different world, though. Yeah. But here we're going to have halachos where you have to every day give him back his shirt back and forth.
It's
more like a pawn shop.
But ours is only if you default. This is
in your hands.
This is in advance.
That's why we already took this in the two previous chapters. It's like you paid back the loan.
So we don't take any collaterals. Now, what if Imchava? What if he took one? We go against his will and we take it away from him. Because the Torah told you not to do something and you do it, it's a null and void. Now, what if in the process, what if she admits she owes him the money? Well, okay, the collateral still goes back because you can't take the collateral, but certainly to Shalem, she has to pay. In other words, the Bezdin can force her to pay against his will. The Torah just said you can't take a mashkin against her will. But to make her pay, the Bezdin can force her to pay. That can happen. What if she's going to deny? She said there never was a loan. Then tishaveh, she has to swear like anyone who a claim is made against a woman. She denies it. She has to swear to get out of it.
The strength was if she denies a loan, he could just say, well, why did I have your collateral then?
Well, you're a bad guy. I never borrowed the money from you.
You're extorting it from me.
So then she'd have to swear that I never owed him any money. Now, let's say the guy took the collateral, and the man says, you better give it back. He says, okay, I'm going to go home, I'll give it back.
He's got to be lashed.
In the process, Ovid Amashkin, he loses the collateral.
Uh-oh.
Onisraf Komshashkin
gets burst.
Now,
he did a loss,
beforehand.
Be corrected.
Wait. So now, Loka, now he gets lashed. What do we mean? Because really, you can't take it. By taking it, he transgresses a negative commandment. Now, we never lash somebody for anything unless, because you can fix it.
Yeah.
So fix it, just give it back. So Kolzman, he can give it back. We're not going to lash him. But once he loses it, it's gone, and he no longer is capable of giving back, at that point, he has transgressed the negative, because he can't fix it up. And now he will get lashed for that.
That was my question.
What? No. So it's in a later halacha talks about the same idea. So now we look at it as that is part of the payment. In other words, let's say she borrowed $100 from him, and she does owe him $100. So he took a $100 watch. Okay, now he wasn't supposed to. He wasn't allowed to. He was supposed to give it back. He couldn't give it back. He lost it. We lash him. But at the end of the day, did he take a $100 watch from her?
Sure did.
Yes. At the end of the day, has it squared the deal? Yes. So now she was paid back, right? Mm-hmm. Now, not in a proper way, but the payment did come back, but he gets lashed in the process.
It's called a painful payment.